Welcome to Design Your Life and Business, the podcast for leaders by Bright Mind Consulting Group. We give you the necessary tools to help you become the architect of not just your business, but your life too. I'm your host, Javon Wooden. Hey, Adara, how are you?
I'm so great, Javon. I'm really excited to be here today.
Awesome. We are excited to have you. Welcome to Design Your Life and Business, the podcast for leaders. Listeners, you are in for a treat. You already know how we started off. We're going to get right into who you are. So first question, Adara, who is Adara Landry?
So I am an emergency medicine physician at the Brigham. I've been here for about 8 years. So Brigham is one of Harvard's hospitals, and I'm an assistant professor, and I focus my career on helping people navigate their careers. So I'm a mentor advisor for medical students at Harvard Medical School. As far as how I got here, it's really interesting. I grew up in Rialto, California, and I share that because the area in which I grew up was not saturated with doctors, engineers, lawyers, physicists who were just readily available to mentor me in any direction I might want to go. And luckily, I had really amazing parents who were very focused on education. I was also luckily not athletic, so there was really no other option for me besides books, right? Like I was able to focus on something that has a more promised return on investment, which I think is school. And so I was really focused on school. I actually started high school at 12, got accepted to UC Berkeley at 15, and I started college when I was 16. I moved out of my parents' house. And when I got there, it was really challenging. It was a very different league. I did not have mentorship. I didn't even really know what mentorship looked like. I'm not even sure that was a concept really taught to me. And I would say that struggle continued all the way through residency. And I eventually started getting more mentors and was able to really see the strength and benefit of having people around you who have traveled similar paths, different paths, more complicated paths, and just being able to really offer advice. And so because I didn't have a lot of access to it early in my career, that's probably why I'm so motivated to spend my career helping other people. And so I do a lot of that now, both in my day-to-day job at Harvard, and then also I do it through writing.
Yes. And we are going to get into your latest work. You have a book coming out. So I want to give you a few moments just to tell us about the book and what made you write it.
I'll start with what made me write it, because I think that will set up what the book is about. So when I got into Berkeley, they actually gave me an asterisk next to my acceptance letter, which was, we'll accept you, but you have to take this really basic entry-level writing class. And so when I got there, I took this class on how to be, basically it was like an English one, but it was like way more intensive. And it sort of read to me, that messaging read to me as, you are not a writer. And I thought of writing as an intrinsic quality versus an acquirable skill. And I assumed I just did not have that quality of being a writer. So actually for many years, I would resent or like turn away from any requirements or opportunities to write because I wasn't comfortable with it. And it wasn't actually until George Floyd's murder that I felt really compelled to write something about it. And so I wrote a very public-facing article. I co-authored it, and it was in USA Today. And I think that was like the flash or the pivotal moment, the inflection point, whatever you want to call it, where I said, oh, I can actually write something, and many people will respond to it. So I started thinking about using my day-to-day life as an advisor and thinking, I wonder if I could write with it, write on the same thing I'm talking about with my students, take those concepts and spread it to a much larger audience. And that would allow me to build my brand, grow recognition across the nation, because I'm writing for these like larger outlets versus like just having one-on-one meetings with my students. It just was a way to like increase my scale, my reach. So I started writing for Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, CNBC, and those sorts of places with a co-author, another Dr. Teresa E. Lewis. And we were writing all these articles, and this is a business podcast, so I think people here really want to make money. Like, you don't get paid for writing those articles.
Yeah.
And so they take a lot of time.
Quick game, right?
Yeah. And so you're writing all the articles you don't get paid for, but the rest of them, not much. And so a book is like another level, right? So it's just a matter of like scaling up these skills. And if you get a book deal, there are some book deals that can go up to 6-7 figures, right? And so not only that, but after you write a book, you can start getting paid as a speaker. So it's a nice sort of way to, again, just continue thinking about your reach, your brand, and your income streams. And so for me, the book was a very clear option. And funny enough, the book is just aligned with what Risa does. We do a lot of mentorship and career development. So we took those skills from one workplace and we applied them to a completely different venue, and they're very translatable skills. And so the book is really about helping early career professionals develop their experience, navigate the workplace. It's for all fields. It's not just for doctors. It's for anyone who's feeling like, why does it seem like everyone else has it figured out and I don't?
Yeah. Well, first, I want to commend you on all that you've accomplished, first and foremost. Secondly, I really want to highlight the fact that although you're a doctor, you could have easily been like, hey, I'm just going to stay right here. I feel like I've made it, right? I'm doing well. A lot of people see doctor, just that title alone. They don't even care what kind of doctor, what you're doing. They just see it as, you know, the pinnacle of success. But you have gone so much further, and you mentioned the term brand. And I want the listeners to understand that brand is very important no matter what field you are in, because that is tied to you. So how did you, like, so early in your career realize, like, hey, I need to build my own brand, not be tied to the title, but who I am as a Darren?
Well, it might have been early in terms of being a physician in my career, but I was like 33. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I was in my 20s and I figured it out. There was a lot of struggle as far as what else I can do besides clinical care. And don't get me wrong, I love clinical care, but I assume you know all about burnout in medicine. And like, it's not sustainable for many people to just see patients now. It's just too hard. So for me, I knew that I would have to have some supplemental income and something else to do so that I don't have to be a full-time doctor. It's just too hard. And that's a different episode.
Well, so let's talk about that really quickly. Like, a full-time doctor. Tell us more about that piece too.
You know, after COVID, I think everyone felt the burnout, right? Like, in all professions, doctors as well. I mean, we were at the front line. I was in the ER, right, during COVID. Absolutely. And so you saw a lot of really traumatic things. And I would say many of us have been scarred from that. And the system has never recovered, right? Like, there's no individual person to say this person is responsible. It's a system nationwide crisis, right? Where hospitals are closing, staff members are quitting. And so it's just really hard to care for patients in the way that we used to. And that takes a toll on everyone there. And so I think people, you might not be a doctor, but you can relate to feeling disconnected from your job, especially after the pandemic. For sure. But you also recognize that, like, at the core, your job is great and you would love to do a little bit of it, but you can't do all of it. You can't only do it, right? Like, I love being a doctor, but I just can't only do that. And so for me, it was like, well, how can I take the skills I have right now? And when people think of me, they're not just going to say Adair Landry is a physician, but they would say Adair Landry is a physician writer, or eventually Adair Landry is an author who also is a physician. And so I think that comes from your question about building a brand. We actually have a chapter on how to become a subject matter expert. So I think that's the first start, is to really understand a topic really, really well and, like, know it very well. And so that comes from reading, watching videos, collaborating, networking, joining communities online, listening to podcasts, like all that content that's related to whatever you want to become good at. So for me, it was writing. And I joined a lot of writing communities. I started writing. I met writing friends. I took writing classes. And then I started publishing. Even things that I was like, I'm not sure if this is really the best I could do. It was like, I need to get stuff out. You have to try. If you don't try, you're never going to know what's working or not working with people, right? You consider them like proof of concepts, or you're just testing something just to see if you're on the right track. And so I would start publishing, even if I didn't feel like this piece was perfect. And that was helpful because I would put it on social media, which is another part of building a brand, which is like advertising yourself in a way that doesn't feel like you're just bragging about how amazing you are. Mm-hmm. You're also teaching people about the experience as well. So we actually have an article about how to brag on social media, because there's a skill set to that too.
There is.
So building a brand is not like a one-step thing. It's really like understanding the content, practicing the content, trying it out, sharing it with people, pivoting, iterating, so that you can get better at that craft.
Yeah. And you mentioned something important about putting it out there and just like, although I'll get better later, but I need to put something out there now. I want the listeners to understand, like, building a brand is a process goal, right? It's one of those things that doesn't necessarily stop because you evolve as a person, right? Your topic evolves, or maybe you change topics. So I want people to understand that building a brand is a long-term thing. And it's something that you can constantly iterate, right? You're constantly learning new things. You're constantly seeing things from a different perspective as you pick up new things and as you go through different experiences. So I love that you said, I put it out there, although I didn't know if it was the best I could do at that moment. I put something out there, and you can always iterate. And it also helps because those people that you're using as your proof of concept, they may provide a piece of insight that you hadn't looked at it from. So it's just important to spark that conversation and to get yourself, one, building the confidence to get out there. And then two, to just say, these are my thoughts.
The other thing about waiting too long is that you can become married to the idea. And then when someone hears about it or gives you feedback, you become defensive because you're so stuck on like, this is going to work because I have convinced myself it's going to work. And anyone else who sees it otherwise is wrong. And so you really want to share your ideas and pitch your ideas. Like even when it came to the book, we were pitching the book like before we had even written a word of it. We were just pitching the table of contents. Like, are we missing anything? Like, is there any blind spot here, any gaps, anything that's left out or we don't need? Because if we had written the entire book first and then started sharing with people, it would be much harder for us to like cut sections out and add things in. So you really want to start sharing your ideas, especially if you're building a brand, very early, as like early to the point where you're feeling uncomfortable sharing. My husband is a CEO of a startup, and he always says that, because in the beginning, I'm like, I'm so nervous to share things. What if they take my ideas? And he always says, Adair, ideas are so cheap. Like, they're so cheap. I'm sure you've heard this phrase 1,000 times. And like, even if someone takes your idea, there's no way they're going to do it exactly the same.
Exactly.
So you can still just do it your way anyway. And so in the writing world, people are always afraid of like sharing their topic for an article. But like, even if I were to write the exact same article as you, the topic would be the exact same. The actual article would look very different
because
we have different paths and things like that. So
absolutely. I'll say that as well. And a lot of people, even if we put out the same exact article, the messenger is different. So we could say the exact same thing. And someone who read yours and read mine, they may not get it from you, but they may get it from me.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to also understand that, like, the person that's delivering that message is for someone else, right? So that's why there's so many different audiences. So I love that he said that, you know, don't worry about that because the implementation in the messenger is always going to be different. So I want to talk about DEI and the terms being canceled and offices of diversity, equity, inclusion being taken away. Well, you are a Black professional, a Black woman, especially in the healthcare industry. So I want to know some of the unique challenges that you faced along the journey and opportunities that you've encountered.
Well, I don't know if you have show notes, but I'll definitely send you the link to an article I put in Vogue, which is much more detailed than what I can go into here. But I will say this, I have been very lucky overall to work in an environment where my colleagues are really supportive and very positive and welcoming to me. That being said, even with all of that positivity, if you are the only Black woman or one of very few in a large group, there's still a gap there as far as feeling like you truly belong, or even if like you feel like you belong, trusting that others think you belong. And so both of those can cause different types, their own anxiety or stress or apprehension, right? So when I arrived to my department, at the time, there were maybe like 70 people working in the department, and I was the only Black woman faculty member at that time. I was actually a fellow, and then I became a faculty member. But for many years, I was the only Black woman at that level. And I think for me, like my first mentor was another Black woman, and that racial concordance, us being able to really understand each other's backgrounds, language, cultural aspects, I think was really helpful. And then I lost that when I became a faculty member. And in regards to my experiences as DEI, you know, I'm kind of torn. A part of me, so right now I'm a co-chair of a DEI committee. And I definitely have seen its inclusion or the highlighting of this work sort of come in waves within the department. And I've also had mentors tell me not to focus my career specifically on DEI work. And so I hear and see conflicting things. And here's where I stand. Me being a Black woman in medicine, at any given point, no matter what title I have or what tasks I'm responsible for, is DEI work. Just by existing, I'm doing DEI work. And so I don't feel like I have to always have a title now. I currently do, and I might step down. And when I step down, I might not feel the need to go on and find another DEI position. Because I think, honestly, just by existing, I'm doing that work.
No, that's
by
powerful.
Mentoring other people.
I want to highlight that because that is powerful. And a lot of people only think of race or gender when they think of DEI work. But there's so many things that go into that. So like you said, existing for many people takes a lot of energy to be the only or the few in a lot of these spaces, because let's face it, the cultures that we're in are primarily made for heterosexual white Christian men, and the change that takes, right? And not nor diverse people in the sense of having maybe some mental challenges or different thinkings or whatever that may look like. So I'm glad you said that, like existing is a part of the work, especially in spaces such as yours, where the numbers really do not favor DEI efforts in any shape or way or form.
Even when it came to writing this book, so our book is called Micro Skills. I haven't said it yet, but Micro Skills, Small Action, Big Impact. And it's coming out with HarperCollins. And when we were writing the book, myself, my co-author, we're both women. I'm a Black woman. And she is a senior level woman in medicine, also a rare breed. We wanted to write a book that was actually not just for women or women of color or physicians. We actually purposefully wanted to put ourselves in front of a very broad audience to show that the diversity of who's writing these business books, because a lot of them, like you said earlier, it's older, cis, hetero, white men. I think they set the standard of what a business book should look like. And we wanted to write a book and not feel like we have to target it to just a small audience. We wanted to show that we actually can be experts for a much larger audience. And that, again, goes back to like this principle of DEI work. I think you can be a manager at McKinsey or a CEO of a startup or a product. I don't know all the tech words, but all those positions, right? You can have those positions and be a diverse member of the team. And I think that is enough. So I actually mentor a lot of people who are students of color, residents of color, and I just normalize for them. If you don't want to do DEI work, like as far as a title or a position, like that's okay. I don't want you to feel guilty or the burden or the sense of obligation that I know a lot of people have, because I've had it too. I don't want them to feel like they have to add that on, because that's unpaid work. It's often not work used to help with promotion. And so to me, I want to keep people from burning out. I want to keep people feeling like their work is recognized. And so I tell them to just follow their passion, be good at what they do. And just by existing is DEI work.
Yeah, I mean, recognition, like representation matters. So if you are laser focused on achieving something and you think it's a personal goal, that matters, because it may not be someone, and not just from the perspective of gender or race or sexual preference and stuff like that, but experiences. And that's why people are so tied to stories, right? The underdog winning, because that experience, I just posted earlier today about my experiences coming from being in extreme poverty, how that, and people resonate with that, right? Because when you see that, you're like, okay, I was feeling a little bit down and feeling like I wasn't doing enough, but the fact that I am doing something, that is enough. We have to give ourselves the space and grace for that. So thank you for that reminder.
Yeah, I think just existing is 100% enough. And I think it's worth people recognizing what it is that they're doing, what it is that they're doing and why they're doing. What are you doing because it's a passion? And what are you doing because you feel obligated to do it? And in the book, we talk a lot about quitting tasks. And one of the things we say is to make sure that the work you're doing truly fulfills you. Now, obviously, you can't quit everything and maintain your job, right? Like, you have to show up, you have to go to meetings. We're not talking about the basics of it, but the extra work that isn't really in your contract, that's not expected of you, but you are volunteering because you feel obligated to do it. I think it's worth anyone, no matter if it's DEI or not, it could be something else, but it's just worth thinking about if it's adding to your brand or taking time away that you could be using to build the brand you intend to build.
Absolutely. As one of my favorite professors at the University of Houston says, Dr. Vanessa Patrick, you got to leverage the power of saying no. And no, and to yourself too, right? It's not just to others, to yourself, because like you said, sometimes we just feel obligated and it's like, why?
Well, there is definitely a phrase like no is a complete sentence, but I think most of us feel uncomfortable just saying no. If someone came to me and asked me an opportunity and I thought to myself, no is a complete sentence, I probably wouldn't just be able to say no. So actually what I tell people is to not necessarily say, you know, definitely don't say yes to everything and don't feel obligated to say no, but you can always just say, tell me more. Mm-hmm. Tell me more is a great way to segue into finding all of the red flags. That's what you really want to know. Like, is this thing that's being offered to you funded? Do you have administrative support? Are you going to be expected to work evenings or weekends? Do you have a team or are you doing this completely solo? Do you have the skill set? You ask those questions up front versus like realizing it after you've already committed. Asking these questions up front, you say, okay, thank you so much for sharing. Give me 48 hours to think about it or 24 hours to think about it and I'll get back to you. I just want to check in with my mentors.
Right.
And to me, that is a way that's going to make sure that you are making the right decision versus I think an impulsive yes and an impulsive no could be the wrong decision too.
Absolutely.
So just tell me more and you learn all those things and then you can make an informed decision, which might end up being yes or it might end up being no.
Absolutely. I love that. And that's another thing. No looks different. It could be a not right now, or it doesn't fit what I'm trying to do. So no is said in many different ways, but you got to make sure that you know when you should be saying it so you don't.
Exactly. Well, and also for some people like myself, I might be nervous saying no to something thinking this could be my only shot.
Mm-hmm.
Or like if I say no, is that going to make other people in my community or in my demographic look bad? Am I a representative? And so like there could be more pressure. And that's why I think taking your time, talking to your mentors, finding out those red flags early can really help you with that processing.
Absolutely. So we're going to move to our by design segment. But before we get there, I just want to ask you, how do you envision the landscape for diverse professionals in healthcare evolving? And what positive changes would you like to see in the industry?
Well, obviously more of us. I want us to reflect our patients. I think that's the goal, right? Where our patients feel like they are seen in the staff and not just in the doctors, but also in the nursing workforce, physician assistant, RT, respiratory therapy, occupational therapy, like the entire body, right? And so we want that to be reflective of what our patients look like and the lives that they have lived. That's the ultimate goal. I would say the way we get there is so complicated because where does the training start to get people to believe in themselves? That's the question you're really asking me. But like I said, going back to where I lived in Rialto, there was no one telling me when I was in elementary school, you're going to be a doctor. That just was, except for my parents. But that wasn't like, we didn't have like Black doctors coming to our, even though we had it was a largely Black school that I went to, we didn't have Black doctors coming in and talking to us about their experience or architects or any of those sorts of things. So that exposure was very limited. And so I think really early role modeling is very key just to like normalize what you can do and sharing those stories. That's for sure one. And then I think mentorship is really important. I can't state that enough. Like you don't want to take any journey, not just in medicine, but any journey alone. You really want a team. And obviously the term that's used a lot in the business world is personal board of directors. But you want those people who are going to help you in different ways, right? Like I have someone who's helping me with my personal finance. I have someone who helps me with being a parent and with my career as a physician, right? And those are my go-to people. And they have a very specific skill set that I go to them for. So I think helping our communities build a professional network that is full, and this is very important, of people sharing strategy, not just like, here's what I'm doing, look at me. That's not networking necessarily. It's this is what I have tried. You might want to try this for your thing because it worked well for me. So the exchange of strategy is really important when it comes to networking. And then I think the third thing would be for obviously leadership bodies or teams, right? Recruitment teams, all sorts of things, to want diversity and to really try to recruit people from different backgrounds, different experiences, and then build a community within that is welcoming. All of these things that I'm sharing, by the way, are not specific to medicine. They could be saying the same thing for law or for tech or any industry, right? Like, these are just general concepts that comes from how do you get people to really come into your field? You probably have to start early.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I love that. Start early. Yeah, and we're starting to see that, you know, a lot of these larger companies, they kind of have prospects in school. So one of the things I always tell them when I speak to these companies is like, if you really want to make a difference, like you said, start early. Just as you go into the affluent neighborhoods and you prospect from high schools and have all these programs where you're kind of giving them the skills before so they can be prepared to work for you, the McKinsey's and all them other world, we can do the same thing in the urban areas, right? You know, and it's going to make a huge impact. So I love everything you said. And really about the action, right? Where, and it's not going to be overnight, and everyone understands that. But I'm excited to see organizations really do more than lip service and really actually put something behind all of these terms and these wishes that we have.
Can I just say one last thing in regards to formalizing your work? So it's important to formalize your work. And I didn't really understand this concept until I saw another really amazing Dr. Julie Silver. Everything she does is formalized, meaning she brands it. She comes up with a name, a term, mm-hmm. she publishes mm-hmm. about it, right? So she's not doing this like under the table, undocumented work. It's like all clearly her brand. And so when I started teaching, at one point in time, I was like helping people with their essays, like people of color from all different areas were coming to me and saying, hey, can you read my essay? And you can't really put that editing on your CV, right? Like if you had sent me an essay that you wanted to write for Forbes or something, I wouldn't be able to say, oh, I read Javon's article and put that on my CV. So I was doing a lot of like informal work. But mm-hmm. after meeting with her, I thought this would be really like, how can I formalize all of these efforts? And so I met with a friend of mine who is wonderful, Dr. Farah Databoy, and we actually decided to formalize that the way we help people of color with writing. And we actually created a nonprofit called Writing in Color, where we help people of color learn to write. And so the work that you're doing, think about a way to formalize it, whether it's through a website, a blog, a podcast, a nonprofit, a for-profit, but think about a way to do it. And it's not necessarily about building money. That's great for some people, many of us, all of us, but it's also just a matter of like formalizing it so that it does feel like a brand or some stronger entity behind you and not just like work that doesn't get credit elsewhere.
Absolutely. And you never know who you may partner with. Someone else may be doing that same work who can help expedite their success and magnify that impact. So that is very important. So thank you for that. So we're going to move to our by design segment. So the first question that I have for you is, what has been the hardest part about designing a life and career you don't need a vacation from?
Well, I think most of us want control over time. And I think the biggest currency in life is time, not money. The greatest currency is time. And so as a physician, I think the hardest part has been not being in full control over my time because I am still scheduled for shifts. I can put in requests and those sorts of things. And I think that's why a lot of folks move into being like independent physicians and having their own private practice because they have a little bit more control over their time. I think the hardest part has definitely been trying to find that correct path. What I did was I took care of my finances early and I really was like on top of student loans so that later in life, if I wanted to quit or cut back, I would have the space to do so. So by going part-time, I'm able to have a little bit more control over my day-to-day. I'm just not on the schedule as much. And that was one thing that really helped me move towards a life that I have designed for myself, which is really centered on owning my time.
Love it. Yes, own your time. That's what I'm talking about. I actually did a checklist on that when I first started out, owning your time. So that's cool. What is the best lesson you've learned on your journey?
Wow, well, I've learned a lot. I would say that I have more skills than I thought that can be translatable or transferable to other areas of the workforce. And so I remember when I was a resident, a doc set me down in a cafe and was like, there's so much you can do with your MD besides just seeing patients. And I was like very confused by that because I had only imagined myself being a doctor at Kaiser. I go to work and I come home. That's what I had imagined before that conversation. But I left that conversation understanding like, oh, I could be a CEO. I could do consulting. I could be just a public speaker, right? Like understanding that there's so much more that I could do that I hadn't considered. So I would say just the recognition of the skills that we all, like I'm sure as a podcaster, you have plenty of skills that could go beyond just being a podcaster. Like you said earlier, you're speaking, you're doing public speaking with companies. Mm-hmm. So like those skills there, they transfer to each other, right? And absolutely. So just sort of like recognizing that one skill shouldn't just stay in that one lane.
No, I love that. And I also, as the audience listens to that, I actually venture to challenge them that they should write like a skills inventory, because a lot of people get stuck in that. They want to, maybe they want to pivot or they want to go into a different industry or start their own businesses. They're like, man, I don't know anything about that. I don't have any skills for that. And I'm like, what are your transferable skills? Because we all have them. And it's not just from like academics or career. Life gives you a lot of skills that we often take for granted. So that skills inventory really identifies some of that.
Yeah, I was talking to someone, actually in the book, we use the example of like, even if you do daily yoga, right? Like now you know something about patience and control over emotions and leading icebreakers or team workshops. Like you know a lot from that one skill that can help a workplace just by doing that one craft, right? That's and so you have to think like, what do I learn from these things I do on a regular basis that I can apply elsewhere?
Yes, I love that. Next question is, what are three tools or tips that you would recommend?
I think for sure, setting boundaries. That's going to help you in life always. And so for me, I'll give a very concrete example of a boundary that I have, which is that I don't do meetings from 6 to 9 p.m. and I don't do meetings on the weekends. There can be like maybe one or two exceptions over the course of a year. But like for the most part, I'm pretty strict about that window because I spend time with my kids. So I would say, setting boundaries is one. The second is when you have the funds, I know not everyone has it right now, and that's okay. I didn't either at all times, but hire someone to clean your house. It's like, depending on where you live, it could be $100 or $200, but even if it's just once a month, but hire someone to do that.
Yes.
Because you're putting money back into the economy, you're helping someone, but B, you can take that day off and do something else. Yeah. It could be rest, it could be working on your blog, you could be meeting, networking with people who can invest in you. So that's number two. And then I think the third is what I call like the snowball effect, building your network. And so the way I do that is I'm going to meet with Javon right now. And when I'm done with this podcast, I'm going to email him and I'm going to ask him two more podcasts he recommends I go on, right? And I use that to build my network and meet more people. And I call that the snowball effect. Every time I get on a podcast or I have a meeting with someone, I just continue to ask them, who do they think I should meet from their network? And that's how you continue to build it. Now, of course, if Javon asked me for people, I would give him introductions as well. And so you want to, this is not just like take. You have to also be willing to give. So building your network, meaning using your existing network, leveraging that to build more people in is very helpful. So those would be the three things: setting boundaries, personal cleaner, and building your network.
I love it. And I'm sure the audience loved it. So how can the people, the listeners, connect with you?
Well, first, feel free to order my book because I would love for people to read it. If this stuff resonated with you, then I think you're going to really like what's in the book. It's called Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impacts. So that's one. The second would be social media. So I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter/X, and it's just at Adair Landry MD. I have like a very generic handle. And then you have my personal website. It's adairlandrymd.com. And again, yes, keeping the brands very simple and consistent. I have a way for you to message me directly if you wanted to reach out. So I'm pretty much available on all streams.
So what you're saying is Google me and then that's
yeah. If you Google me, you're going to find stuff.
Absolutely. No, I love it. It's been a fun conversation and a very valuable conversation, Adair. Really appreciate you stopping through Design Life and Business, the podcast for leaders. Appreciate all the insights and value you've dropped for us. Listeners, go play this back. Implement what she said, because she gave you a lot of jewels on branding, personal development, on career development, name it. It's in here. So go ahead and take a listen back. And remember, as always, keep ascending. Design Your Life and Business, the podcast for leaders, is brought to you by Bright Mind Consulting Group. To find out more about Bright Mind Consulting Group and how you can become the best leader possible, visit brightmindconsultinggroup.com. Make sure you search for Design Your Life and Business on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Bright Mind Consulting Group, we cannot thank you enough for listening.